Good afternoon, everybody. Today is Monday, March 27th, and it is 1 p.m. here in Woodland Hills, California. My name is Salvador Farias, and you are listening to Let's Get Real, where we get to meet people that make film happen. Our guest today works with the Warner Archive and is in charge of their weekly podcast. I'd like to welcome Matt Patterson to the show.
Hello.
How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing so well. By the way, I just thought I'd plug this lovely campus, because it is, when I think of college now, I think of this college as a campus, and that mostly has to do with the first season of Community.
Yeah, that was filmed here.
Yeah, and I was so excited because I recognized the cafeteria as being the real cafeteria here. And I was like, oh my God, I've been there before. That's a real college cafeteria. That's where art and college collide.
Right. So it's a humbling experience to be here today.
It is. It is humbling, and I'm honored.
Oh, I'm glad to have you with us. I want to know a little bit about you. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in exciting New Jersey, and then I went to college in upstate New York, and there was a winter where I was walking between two buildings outside. You know how colleges are, you're outside, and it was January, and I thought, I don't have to deal with this. So as soon as a month after graduating from college, some friends of mine and I drove out here. I had never been here before, and I haven't left.
Awesome. You just fell in love with L.A., California?
Falling in love with L.A. takes some time. But this is where the entertainment industry is located and where the average temperature is in the mid-60s.
Right.
So those are two good things. If you want to do entertainment and in this country right now, there are basically two places that you can be located at. And this is even true in the internet age, because meeting people in person still helps you more than just relying on the internet. There are a lot more opportunities now with the internet and getting your stuff showcased. But to maximize the opportunities in your career, you need to either really be in New York or L.A. at some point. I mean, there are people who, they come here, they establish themselves, and then they can go elsewhere. And then there are others that are trapped here like a roach motel. You can never escape.
Right. Well, you brought up the internet, and you had a really big part, and you were pioneering viral videos back in the day. How did you get such an early grasp on what the internet could do and what you could do with it?
Well, when I was in college, one of the great, this was a long time ago, but one of the greatest things they did was have a free hookup to the internet in every dorm room, and I had not had that. So this is going back to the late 80s.
Right.
And the internet was hooked up to my college campus in 1989. And I couldn't afford a computer, but my roommate had one. And then I just discovered it, and it bloomed. So when I left school and I was pursuing film opportunities, and I had at school, I had taken over doing a print magazine, a humor magazine, and I ran it pretty much myself for a number of years, and I was trying to figure out a way to electronically distribute it, because I thought, oh, that would save money, right? And so I thought at the time that I invented electronic distribution of magazines, but once I went online, I found out I had not invented it. That's something about the internet that you quickly discover, is that when you think you came up with something yourself, you find that other people had done it. But so I basically started repurposing my old humor magazine and putting it online. And then that actually opened up a lot of opportunities. And one of which was that my friends who had an early avid of their own, we were able to shoot comedy videos and get them online to people bypassing, right, like cable TV and stuff like that, even though we were simultaneously pursuing careers in that. So one of the things that I discovered in the late 90s was that if you took two very popular things that got people very excited and mix them together, that would get people very angry. And one of the most successful online pranks, we'll call them, that we did was where I decided to pose as a fundamentalist Christian who was against Star Wars.
Right.
And we created, my friends and I, the Tool of Satan website, and we went out and protested Star Wars openings with signs and filmed it. And then we posted them online, and people thought it was real, and we thought it was ridiculous. But flash forward, right, like 20 years later, 19 years later, and that is now part, like, fake news is now part of the discussion of what's going on in this country. And early on, we were discovering kind of through humor that people will believe anything, and you just have to state the case strongly. And so we built a whole website around that concept. And for us, that took off. Like, by 2005, we were I had the 20,000th most visited website in the world because we drove people crazy.
Right. You also had a Puido website.
Yes, that is another organization. Well, you did your research. That is the people who enjoy eating tasty animals. And we had first done that to promote sketch comedy shows. We went out to Venice Pier, like the boardwalk area, and we set up a table that was a pro-meat-eating organization. And then we eventually filmed doing that and launched a whole website with it. And the culmination of that was when I received death threats from vegans on my telephone. They found my telephone number. And then my girlfriend at the time, who answered it, tried to explain to them that it was a comedy website and that they just needed to do a little bit more research. They stopped calling. Mm. But my girlfriend was very, very angry that she had to deal with death threats.
And how have you seen the internet evolve since then?
Well, social media is such a big, probably social media combined with phones is the biggest change to the internet that's happened. And that, you know, now happened like 7 years ago. But if you can think about like what it was like before smartphones, right? Mm-hmm. And now, and not only has it changed how we consume entertainment, but just how we consume our lives, right? And now somebody who pre like 2000, let's say 9, let's just kind of draw that line in, or 10 is when it just started to, I always see it's like, when did my mom get a technology is when it became popular. So my mom got a smartphone around 2010. So right. I'm like, okay, that's when it was. But my mom got email in 1998. So like, that's when people had email in my head. I call that the mom model.
Gauge.
Yeah. But before that, you know, when people didn't have these fully intelligent phones, you would have to like give them full directions to somewhere, or like your plans on meeting were different. Like you made plans ahead of time, and events were publicized in like weekly newspapers. Social media didn't push all this stuff on you 24/7. So the good news is, it's easier and cheaper to get your message out to more people than ever because of these pieces of affordable, to at least us in the U.S., technology. But at the same time, it increases the amount of noise in the signal. So it's almost just as hard now, or even harder in some ways, to rise above the signal, rise above the noise to amplify your signal. Like when I was in college and put this together very, you know, this kind of stuff together and cheaply, like I would get on NPR because they'd be like, there's this crazy humor magazine, right? Like you launch something like that now, nobody's going to talk about you right. on NPR. I just did it because I figured it out before other people, but I didn't make money at it though. This is the key here, is that like I was all like visionary, but I just wanted to tell terrible jokes. I didn't want to like make money
right.
and oops. But hey, here I am. Look at this beautiful studio.
We're glad to have you here.
Yes, I'm happy to be here.
And now you work for the Warner Archive. Could you explain a little bit what you guys do at the Warner Archive?
So this is, and we just celebrated our 8th birthday last week. And I was part of this program in the, since the beginning. I had a more minor role that had grown. And what we do that was different, especially at the time, was Warner Brothers has a very, very large library of film and TV, but the production method of releasing those things was expensive, and then it had to get retail placement in stores. And so back like in 2005 or so, some executives came up with the idea, and based off of the record industry, hey, what if we were able to produce discs on demand? And so you'd have a retail, like an internet retailer. I'd pick one of these, you know, more obscure films, and it would be manufactured at a facility. The cover would be printed, and it would be shipped out. And the advantage to this model was that you didn't have to carry inventory. You didn't have to worry about returns. And then over time, you could release more titles more quickly, and you would, A, be combating piracy by making these things available and easier to access than a pirated stream. B, it would fund itself in expanding, and then what eventually happened was putting money back into restoration of these more obscure titles that would not have had a larger audience. So in that amount of time, we've released like 2,500 different products, probably 3,000 films and TV, and that's not including shows. That's like seasons,
right?
So that's a huge amount of library material. Now, simultaneously, that's just physical product, DVDs and Blu-rays. There's of course been the huge revolution in digital distribution, and as we were making these masters, right, then they would be fed to iTunes, and it would get out to subscription video services. So that also allows the library to expand. Discs are now more of a function of collecting for collectors. Also people who want the highest quality and whenever they want it, because subscription video comes on and off. You start to run into problems of unavailability. So if you have a disc, you know it's always there. And Blu-ray and high resolution, one of the great things that's happened, and this is even within the last 5 years or so, the technology to restore these films has come down in price. So we can afford, even though the market is shrinking for physical disc sales, we are able to restore more and more obscure films to a great level that would not have been possible. So it's kind of multi-tiered in its approach, but essentially it's like taking and monetizing the assets that of the Warner Brothers library and making them available to people how they want them.
How often do you guys release? Is it a weekly thing you guys release, yeah, two or three?
Yeah. It's it kind of depends. We can do up to like 10 releases a week. Right now, we have more of a focus on Blu-ray like this year. And so it's like one or two Blu-rays a week, you know, between four and six in film. And sometimes one of those would be a season of television or so. So film and TV. And then we've been releasing some new product to DVD. And like last week it was these super obscure movies from the 30s from RKO Studios. And so they were mostly like B programmers. You know, this is like TCM, 3AM kind of stuff, which is great. And then we've also been able to go back and find commercial DVDs that are out of print. And so what happens is, right, there's a window to a traditional product like books or records or whatever, and then they, you know, are no longer available in stores. They go out of print. But people still want these films. And so you'll see on eBay, right, or even Amazon, certain DVDs will go for like $80 because a collector wants a DVD. So we have those assets. So we've just basically taking that disk, converting it to our, it's the same disk image, right? But we convert it to our industrial process. So instead of paying $80, you can pay like $15, $16.
Right. And you have a podcast for the Warner Archive.
Yes.
And you guys discuss these new releases. I know on the last episode for your eighth birthday episode, you guys did the Batman
That's right.
series.
Batman Brave and the Bold. You listened to the Batman Brave and the Bold season 3 Blu-ray podcast?
What? Yeah. It was that one.
Yeah. So each week. And when I joined, initially my boss would go up and he introduced, they took old radio shows that were, because this is kind of interesting, right? The way that they would advertise movies then is they would take a movie and kind of cut it down to like 30 minutes or so, and they would have the actors like read the script, and they'd be like, if you like that, go see the movie. Or they would adapt, later they would adapt old movies into radio scripts. And so we were making those available, and my boss would introduce them. And then in 2012, I was like, well, why don't we just talk about what's coming out each week, make like our own podcast. And we have a lovely recording facility on the lot, and we go and do that every week. And so that's a lot of fun. And then we and my boss and my coworker who are with me, they are extremely knowledgeable, especially my boss. And he doesn't he goes and does these podcasts without any notes, which is amazing because he's like a human IMDb. And I'm like, I've got my phone open, and I'm like, what's going on? I consider myself the color commentary.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you noticed that, but I'm like the dumb guy on the podcast, which for you people, I'm just playing a role. I'm really smart.
So how much fun is that to do? Just come up and talk about shows? Like, do you...
I watch them all, yeah.
You watch them all in the week span? And
yeah.
That must just that's be fun.
Yeah. No, that is great. Of course, I'm not watching them in the cubicle at work. This is like, I'm like, oh, after work, oh, I got to go watch Demon Seed. But that's not hard, right? Like, oh, Demon Seed, by the way, a wonderful 1976 or 77, because I don't have my notes in front of me. horror movie starring Julie Christie where her husband is a professor. And he kind of brings home his artificial intelligence project. They're gonna destroy it, and it hides in the terminal in his house. And like the Nest system, it controls like all the locks and the security system, and it locks his wife in, and wants to procreate with her to create a hybrid human computer baby.
Wow.
Yeah, 70s. So that's terrifying and yet pertinent today. Although my phone has never tried to hit on me like that.
Siri's a little more subdued.
Yeah, it is. It's like, oh, no, I can't give you that information. I'm like, come on, Siri. But it's not locking my doors.
Right. So what are some of your other responsibilities? Is it mostly the podcast and you have to go through the rigorous watching the shows?
No, I am my specific. Right now, I do catalog marketing and... I do a newsletter. My coworker, he's a copywriter, and we both put together a weekly newsletter. We also handle social media for the brand, at Warner Archive or on Facebook, Warner Archive. Digital marketing is a wonderful tool because, you know, as I was discussing before, we can sit there without spending any advertising dollars and talk about movies and make movie recommendations. And we share people reviewing these movies. So it's not just our opinion because we love everything. And that helps consumers. You know, like there is no point in history where at any one time you can sit in front of a device on your in your pocket or like in or your television where so much information is available so cheaply. You know, it's just it's hours and hours of your life. And so you need somebody to sort that for you. And we try to help people do that by keeping them informed. And that's that I see is our primary job. And then hopefully you'll buy the movies.
Right.
Or TV shows.
So you go through all this because you actually like film and you like television. Where did that start for you? Do you know when you know that's...
Well, I went and got a degree, you know, in media. And before that, I realize more and more, like, that my terrible TV watching habits as a kid, although I wasn't allowed to watch much TV. We didn't have cable. But so I would just watch anything, right? That serves me so well now because it exposed me to all different types of things, and you learn to appreciate different bits. And it's always, you know, it's fun to talk about it. And I did, I studied like writing and directing. And so when you also bring a little bit of that knowledge into your watching and consumption, it broadens it and makes it more fun for you because you can, and the more you learn, the more you see that's going on and you see where something in your opinion succeeded or failed. And the one of the bigger questions for me is why? Why did that succeed or why did that fail? So I will watch both. Like some people don't have time to watch a failure. I will watch something that, you know, and some people, right, if there's a movie or a TV show that I don't like, there's somebody, though, who probably does like it. What do they like about it, right? That's interesting to me. And then you can start to get into, well, what else does that person like? And how is that different than my experience? You know, like, so it's the more you dig, the more questions reveal itself, right? It's like the biggest rabbit hole. And then, you know, you get to watch movies and tell people you're working.
Right. And then that just brings you into a new whole subculture of films that you've never dived into before.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, okay. So one of my many jobs is to help run sponsorships. And we sponsor this week here in L.A. There's the Film Noir Fest that's running. And I went last night to it. And not necessarily because they weren't showing Warner movies that night. They were showing movies from Universal and Columbia. Now, because I have to watch all these Warner things, I love going and seeing film noirs from other studios at events like this. And Eddie Muller, who's the host of this, comes up and does what we do. You know, and he explains, like in 5 minutes, this is the film, this is what it's about, these are the stars, this is the circumstances in which it was made. This is maybe what they were trying for, and here are the results. You know, so are these movies Casablanca? No, right? They're products of their time, but there's something I've never seen before. And then for me personally, it's like, oh, this is a different set of stars from, you know, the mid 40s. Mm-hmm. And so it's like all new. So I'm paying attention.
Okay. Is this something that you I mean, I'm sure you didn't grow up thinking you were going to be here.
No, no idea.
But what was your main idea? Like, that? Where did you want to head, like, in your career?
You know, one of the things with entertainment, and you talk to anybody who's had a career for some time, and there are some people who are very lucky in that they find what they want, and they know what they want, and they pursue it, and they achieve that. But other times, it's sort of zigging and zagging. So, you know, you could call it a problem is that, like, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, yeah, that sounds cool, right? Like that's fun. That isn't as focused necessarily. But that lack of focus, you know, when I got this job eight years ago, that lack of focus and also being exposed to digital media, combining with the taste, you know, profiles and the events and the films that I enjoyed and different things that I had been working on all kind of came together in this. And I had personally a different marketing approach than people who had normally been working with the studio because they were used to working with hits, right? And I knew I wasn't necessarily interested in either making or helping to promote. I mean, while it's fun and I've done it, but I just didn't feel as much a part of that. And so when I can help people discover something new that's so broad-based, that's what came out, right? And that's sort of the surprising people and surprising myself is the thing that I've always had, right? Whether it's through comedy or publishing or, you know, like I've helped work on documentaries and all this different stuff. It's like finding something new and holding it up for people. And that's finding your voice, right, as an artist. And so while my current job is not – I bring my voice to the job, but the voice of the product is the voice, right? It's got a little piece of me. But that's when you're considering a career in the arts, that's something you should always be open to.
Awesome. I think that's great advice for anyone listening who is going into the arts and don't have a set career path in front of them.
Don't worry about it.
It'll come to you. You just follow.
And let me just point out, there are more jobs now in the arts than there have ever been, and that's due to all this digital distribution. Like, there's more film and TV. There's just more of everything.
Awesome. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. Where can they listen to your podcast? Do you want to give them a website or...
You can go to iTunes and look up Warner Archive, and you can find our podcast on that, or Warner Archive Podcast. That will work as well. Just enter that into the Google, and you can listen to it any way you want.
Perfect. I want to thank him so much for coming on the show. Please join me next week on Let's Get Real. This is Salvador Farias with KPCRadio.com.